The sutta chosen for today is Rohitasa Sutta, and it is from Anguttara Nikaya 4.45 and translated by the Most Venerable Bhikkhu Bodhi. Rohitasa Sutta. On one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling at Savatthi in Jetha's grove, Anathapindikatha's park. Then, when the night had advanced, the young Deva Rohitasa of stunning beauty, illuminating the entire Jetha's grove, approached the Blessed One. He paid homage to the Blessed One, stood to one side and said, "Is it possible, Bande, by traveling to know, see, or reach the end of the world, where one is not born, does not grow old and die, does not pass away and get reborn?" "I say, friend, that by traveling, one cannot know, see, or reach that end of the world, where one is not born, does not grow old and die, does not pass away and get reborn." It is astounding and amazing, Bande, how well this was stated by the Blessed One. "I say, friend, that is by traveling, one cannot know, see, or reach that end of the world where one is not born, does not grow old and die, does not pass away and get reborn. In the past, Bande, I was a seer named Rohitasa, son of Bhoja, one processing psychic potency, able to travel through the sky. My speed was like that of a light arrow, easily shot by a firm bow archer, one trained, skillful, and experienced, across the shadow of a palmyra tree. My stride was such that it could reach from the eastern ocean to the western ocean. Then, while I possessed such speed and such a stride, the wish arose in me, I will reach the end of the world by traveling. Having a lifespan of 100 years, living for 100 years, I travel for 100 years without pausing except to eat, drink, chew and taste, defecate and urinate, and to dispel fatigue with sleep. Yet I die along the way without reaching the end of the world. It is astounding and amazing, Bande, how well this was stated by the Blessed One. I say, friend, that by traveling, one cannot know, see, or reach that end of the world where one is not born, does not grow old and die, does not pass away and get reborn. I say, friend, that is by traveling, one cannot know, see, or reach that end of the world where one is not born, does not grow old and die, does not pass away and get reborn. Yet I say that without having reached the end of the world, there is no making an end of suffering. It is in this phantom long body, endowed with perception and mind, that I proclaim 1. The world, 2. The origin of the world, 3. The cessation of the world, and 4. The way leading to the cessation of the world. The end of the world can never be reached by means of traveling across the world, yet without reaching the world's end, there is no release from suffering. Hence, the wise one, the world's knower, who has reached the world's end and lived the spiritual life, having known the world's end at peace, does not desire this world on another. End of the sutta, and this sutta is translated by Bhikkhu Bodhi. So may we invite Bande to expound on this, please.
Friends, Rohitasa Sutta is one of very profound discourse, which contains one of the most profound utterance of the Buddha. That is, the world is within this fathom long body and mind. The sutta centers around two types of worlds here. The one of the world, which is the physical world. The world that we understand in ordinary sense of the world. This is the world where we can see mountains, rivers, the earth, plants, animals, stars, and the galaxies. This is the universe, the physical world, the external world that we all live in. However, there's another world. This is the mental world. With our six sense faculties, every single moment, we create a particular world. This is the inner world created by ourselves. Now, the teachings of the Buddha, the Four Noble Truths, are to be directly realized within this mental world. The sutta gives us three important aspects to the concept of the world, as well as how we should practice the path in order to reach its end, the ultimate goal of enlightenment. So let us understand these three aspects of the sutta. First of all, we come across this young Deva, Rohitasa, goes to the Buddha and he asks a question. Venerable Sir, is it possible by traveling one can reach the end of the world where no one is die and reborn? In other words, is there a place of existence in this universe where there is no birth and death cycle in operation? In another term, is there a realm of existence in the physical world which is beyond birth and death cycle? The terms he exactly use: is it possible, Bhante, by traveling to know, see, or reach the end of the world where one is not born, does not grow old and die, does not pass away and get reborn? So Buddha, of course, says there is no such a place. So this explains that there is no place in this physical universe where one can be free from the birth and death cycle of existence. All the sentient existence, human beings, animals, divine beings in various realms of existence, they all undergo the cycle of birth and death, samsara. We all are wandering on in this cycle of existence. Even though certain religions believe that heavens are the final refuge and heavenly beings are eternal, from the Buddhist point of view, devas or divine beings or any other supernatural beings, they are not permanent. And they enjoy bliss and happiness temporarily. and they will disappear from their realms of existence and they will reappear somewhere else. So within the conditioned existence, there's no realm, there's no planet, there's no place in this universe where living beings can be free from birth and death cycle. So this is one of the most important aspect. The other aspect here is the Buddhist concept of the universe. From the Buddhist point of view, the universe is without a discoverable beginning or end. It has spread throughout the time and space. And this sutta gives us a very striking simile. And as this Deva said, in one of his previous life, he was someone who achieved a great psychic powers. And he explained his ability of traveling through the space. So when he explained his ability, he used three important terms. One important term is speed. So when he gives an example to understand his simile, he used the term, it is like an archer shoot a light arrow which can go through the shadow of a palmyra tree. So here what he is trying to say that he achieved the speed of the light, the use in the light arrow and a shadow of a palmyra tree, he is trying to say that he achieved the speed of the light. Then he said his speed related to the space. He says he could take one step or stride from eastern ocean to the western ocean. So that covers the distance. Then he said he lived 100 years. And throughout this 100 years, he traveled with the intention of finding the end of the world. But he died. So now this simile gives us an understanding that by traveling, the end of the world cannot be reached, no matter how speed you would travel, no matter how long you would travel, but still there will be more galaxies, more worlds. The most advanced telescope, which was just launched, I think 2021, James Webb Space Telescope, it recently has sent some information about the universe. And the scientists say that it suggests that there are 10 times more galaxies in the universe than previously thought. This was just, this news was just out. So it means when we find more scientific and technological ways to understand the universe, our understanding become more and more and it expand. So there can be millions of galaxies as Buddhist scriptures point out. So it is impossible to reach the end of the universe. However, assuming that someone were to reach the end of the universe, suppose we assume, still that is not the end of the dukkha, as the Buddha pointed out. So Buddha said to the young Deva, it is not possible by traveling one can end dukkha, but without reaching the end of the world, one will not end the dukkha. So what is this world the Buddha is referring here? This is the world within the body and mind. Imasmin yeva vyamamatte kalebare sasamhi samanake lokancha panyapemi loka samudayancha loka nirodancha loka nirodha gamini patipadancha. In this fathom long body, with its perception and mind, I proclaim the world, its origin, its end, and the path leading to its end. This is a statement of the Buddha, one of the most revolutionary statements. We do not come across such a statement in any other system of thinking. Here the Buddha talks about the Four Noble Truths. Now, there are many other suttas where we come across the elaboration of the Four Noble Truths as well as the concept of the inner world. One of these sutta is a Loka Sutta. The term Loka here means the world. And the Buddha explained how world arises and how world ceases within the body and mind. And the Buddha says, based on the six sense bases, contact comes to existence. Salayatana pachaya passo. So now let's understand how within our body and mind the world arises. In our body, we have six sense faculties: eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and our mind. With our eye, we can see forms. We can see light, shapes. With our ear, we can hear the sound. With our nose, we can smell. With our tongue, we can taste. With our body, we can come to know that tactile objects, tangible objects, the touch sensations. With our mind, we can come to know the thoughts, ideas, concepts, plans. So these are the six sense faculties. Remember, in Buddhist teaching, mind is a faculty. It's a sense faculty like any other sense faculties. But it is very special because mind can possess the data that we receive through other five sense faculties. At the same time, mind can possess the data its own. So mind is the most important faculty here. Now Buddha says, when the eye come across a visual form, at that moment arise eye consciousness. So meeting of the eye, visual object, and arising of eye consciousness, and that is what we call passa or contact. When the ear come across sound, and then we come to have ear consciousness, awareness of the sound. At that stage when these three things come together, that is what we call passa or contact. When the nose come across smell, at that moment we come to have the awareness of the smell, nose consciousness. At that moment, these three things come together, that is what we call passa or contact. So in this way, through six sense faculties, every single second we are living, we come to aware of this world, our surrounding. So this is what it means, based on six sense faculties, arise, contacts. Then afterwards, what will happen? Passa paccaya vedana. Based on the contacts, arise feelings. Now, feelings arise within the body and mind, and this is how we come to know our external and internal world. When the eye and the visual objects come together, then the feelings related to eye arise. Similarly, related to other sense faculties, feelings arise through ears and sound, feeling arise with nose and smell, feeling arise with tongue and taste. So in this way, feelings come into existence through these six sense faculties. As an organism, we receive these data, and when these data come into contact with us, and feelings arise within the body and mind. But that is not the end. Feeling will lead to craving. Vedana paccaya tanha. How feelings become the condition factors for craving to arise. This is the most important point here. When pleasant feelings arise, then craving arise in the mind to sustain these pleasant feelings. We want to enjoy these pleasant feelings. We want to prolong them. We want to sustain them. But the feelings arise and then they disappear. So we want to look for the pleasant feelings again and again and again. So ordinary human beings, driven by this urge, driven by this strong craving for pleasant feelings, they will gratify their sensual faculties. Again and again, again and again, you will look for this pleasurable, favorable, pleasant feelings through sense gratification. But these sensual feelings just arise and disappear. They arise and disappear. So again and again, you have to look for them. And these pleasurable, pleasant feelings arise through sensual gratification. They are like fuel to craving. So craving will demand more pleasure. So the craving is like a flame, and the pleasure is like fuel. So as long as we provide the fuel, and the flame will keep on burning, and the burning flames or increasing flames will demand more pleasure. So in this way, we are running after pleasure. We are driven by our innate craving. We are helpless here. And as the Buddha pointed out, tanha daso, we have become a slave to craving. So craving is driving us in life to look for more pleasure, more gratification. Furthermore, craving also push us to competition. These pleasurable, favorable feelings, they do not come out of nothing. We need to gratify sensual pleasure, sensual faculties in order to have these pleasant feelings. So in order to gratify, we need to achieve the sensual pleasure. So in order to achieve the sensual pleasure, we need to struggle. We have to work and compete with each other. In this competition, of course, many more miseries come into existence, including killing, stealing, and other evil, immoral activities. Because we want the pleasure, and to get this pleasure, we will get into competition. And in this competition, we will try to achieve what we want, survival of the fittest. Now, what will happen when unpleasant feelings arise in our mind? When unpleasant feelings arise in our mind, then craving arises to get rid of them. It is a form of aversion. So we hate these unpleasant feelings, and hatred arises out of these unpleasant feelings. So hatred can burst within ourselves, or it can be directed towards ourselves, which can be ended in self-harming and suicide and damaging oneself. Or this hatred can project outwardly, so you may do evil, wicked, immoral, unwholesome acts, or you might kill someone or damage someone. You might do destructive action. So that is also arise because of craving. And here, when the unpleasant, unbearable feelings arise in our life, and we produce hatred. So feelings eventually lead to craving. Craving for more pleasure, craving for existence, and craving for destruction. Now, when the craving arises and when we do activities in this way through our body and mind, and then that leads to solidify the craving further, make the craving more strong. And that stage is known as upadana. Tanha paccaya upadana. Because of craving arise, clinging, grasping. Upadana here means intensifying and solidifying the craving. The Buddhist text gives a simile to understand this. Craving is like a thief who is extending his hands to steal an object. Upadana or grasping is like actual taking of the item. So craving makes us propel forward to grasping. Here we will grasp the world with sensual craving, with views. We will cling to rites and rituals, or we will cling to the idea of I, me, and mine in deeper sense of the attachment, which is the atta or soul. So craving will propel us to the next stage of clinging. Clinging in return will create the necessary conditions for becoming. So this is, of course, creating the karmic conditioning that we will move forward to the future existence as human beings or animals or divine beings or any other beings. So this is called becoming, bhava, upadana paccayo bhava. Because of grasping, then existence come into it. And then future birth, bhavapachya jati, because of the existence, rebirth occur. Once rebirth occur again, we go the same cycle of getting old, sickness, death, sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief. So the cycle will repeat again and again and again. So this is how we create our world now. This is how we create our world moving into the future. This is how we are moving from realm to realm. In this sutta, Buddha also says how we can reach the end of the world. So now, when six sense faculties come across light, sound, smell, taste, touch, and ideas, at that moment of arising of consciousness of these, related to these sense faculties and datas, what we call passa, and based on that, feelings will arise. But we as human beings have ability to break the link between feelings and craving. This is the link that we can break, and if we can break this link, then we can end the mess of suffering. We can end the wheel of suffering, because feelings arise in our body and mind, but it's not necessarily we let craving to take action here. This is where in Buddhist teaching, the Noble Eightfold Path comes into practice. Now, the key word here is mindfulness. When the feelings arise, whether they are happy feelings, unhappy feelings, neutral feelings, or any other whatsoever feelings, whether they arise from our ears, nose, tongue, body, or any other sense faculties, at that moment of the arising of the feelings, we maintain mindfulness. The practice related to this mindfulness is well explained by the Buddha in Satipatthana Sutta, four foundation of mindfulness. Here, when six sense faculties come across outside world, at that moment of contact, when the feelings arise within the body and mind, we are observing them. We are observing how these feelings arise within the body and how these feelings arise within the mind, what they do to our body, how they arise and how they disappear. We also try to understand how these feelings move forward and create our thoughts, mental formations. And then when you observe this process deeper and deeper, we will come to know how these things are working in interconnected, interdependent mechanism within the body-mind mechanism, how these things arise, and we become more aware. So mindfulness is the key. So the Noble Eightfold Path has specifically designed for this. So first stage in the Noble Eightfold Path, we observe precepts, sila. These precepts are there simply to prevent us reacting based on our impulses, to prevent our verbal and physical misbehavior based on our own feelings. Usually, ordinary human beings, when feelings arise and based on the feelings, they will react with anger or with craving. So here we observe the precepts to prevent this happening by observing righteous principles, refraining from killing, stealing, such precepts. So the precepts help us to discipline ourselves, our speech and actions. But afterwards, we still need to watch our own mind. This is the meditation training, which involves mindfulness, concentration, and energy, which is vipassana bhavana, insight meditation. When we practice this meditation and we develop direct insight to the nature of our body and mind, and discover the fundamental nature of our existence, which is everything in the constant flux, anicca. And clinging to these five aggregates eventually create miseries and sufferings, dissatisfaction, dukkha. And there's nothing that we can point out as something as I or me, because everything is in a constant flux. So there's no intrinsic entity or value here that we can cling to as I or me or myself. So with this understanding of our own nature, the delusion, ignorance will disappear together with its craving. So when the craving is discarded here through wisdom, because when the wisdom arises, ignorance disappears. The craving is rooted in the ignorance. So together with that, craving and ignorance together disappear, and mind release from all bonds and fetters. And this is called freedom, enlightenment. So this is the end of the world, end of the suffering. So Buddha, in this sutta, when he says, in this fathom-long body with its perception and mind, I proclaim the world, its origin, its end, and the path leading to its end. He is referring to the Four Noble Truths. So Four Noble Truths are to be realized within the body and mind. Okay, so this is enough as a talk. We can open for this Q&A.